Chapter 13. Joyful Abandon. It occurs to me now to mention certain temptations that I have noticed tend to assail beginners. I myself have grappled with many of these, and I think I have some important advice to offer. As you embark on the spiritual path, try to remember to walk with joyful abandon. Some people think that if they relax a little, their devotion will fall apart. Of course, there's nothing wrong with being self-aware so that you avoid letting arrogance lead you into habitual patterns that dishonor God. There aren't many people who are so perfect that they can afford to let down their guard against the snares of human nature altogether. So, until we are wholly virtuous, some vigilance is necessary. Throughout our lives, it is important to be mindful of our own insignificance, because this hones our humility. But there are many good reasons to engage in recreation, as I have said. For one thing, it enables us to return to prayer reinvigorated. We just need to use a little discretion in everything we do. Be confident. Don't hold back your heart's desires. Believe in the power of God. With His help, we will gradually reach the station that the saints attained. We just need to keep striving. If the saints had not been singular in their desire and steadfast in their determination, applying themselves little by little, they would never have risen to such a high state. His Majesty is the friend and lover of courageous souls as long as they walk with humility and shed self-importance. I have never seen such a soul hanging back on the path, nor have I ever noticed a cowardly soul, especially one who hides behind a facade of false humility, make a fraction of the progress in many years that courageous souls make in only a few. I am amazed by how much can be accomplished on this path by being bold and striving for great things. Even if the soul is not quite strong enough yet, she can still lift off and take flight. She can soar to great heights. But like a fledgling bird, she may tire herself out and need to perch for a while. I used to reflect often on the words of St. Paul, who said that all things could be done through God. It was clear that I could accomplish nothing by myself. This understanding was very helpful to me. So were the words of St. Augustine, who said, "Give me, Lord, what you ordain, and ordain what you will." I've always thought that St. Peter didn't lose a thing by throwing himself into the sea, even though he became afraid as soon as he had done it. This initial determination is crucial. It's also important in the early phase to move slowly, use discretion, and follow the advice of a spiritual guide. Just make sure that your guide doesn't see your soul as a toad capable of only pursuing small lizards. And always be humble, remembering that this strength arises from a power beyond our own. It's important to pay attention to the quality of this humility. One of the ways I believe that the spirit of evil hurts people who practice prayer and prevents them from making progress is by deceiving them about the true nature of humility. It makes us worry that our desire to imitate the saints is delusional and that our longing for self-denial is self-serving. Then it tries to convince us that since we ourselves are sinners, we should look to the saints for inspiration, not imitation. I do agree that it is wise to be discriminating about which deeds of the saints we should imitate and which we are meant to simply admire. It would do no good for a weak or sickly person to take on severe fasts or harsh penances, or to go off alone to the desert where she could find no place to sleep and nothing to eat. But we should remember that with God's help, we are fully capable of detaching from the world, turning away from personal honor, and releasing our tight grasp on possessions. Our hearts are so stingy that we're afraid we'll lose the earth beneath our feet if we turn our attention away from the body for a single moment and shift our focus to the spirit. We convince ourselves that because our meditations are frequently disturbed by concerns about the necessities of life, all we need to do is secure our material things, and then we will be able to get on with the practice of prayer. It makes me sad that we have so little trust in God and so much regard for ourselves that worries like these so easily throw us off course. The truth is, when we are not evolving on the path, a few petty annoyances are as upsetting as numerous severe trials would be to a more mature practitioner. And we presume to call ourselves spiritual? It seems to me that people in this state are trying to reconcile body and soul in such a way that they obtain maximum comfort here on earth and ensure their entrance to heaven at the same time. If we walk in righteousness and hold fast to virtue, this method is fine. But we will advance at the pace of a chicken. We will never reach spiritual liberation this way. This is a good balance for householders who need to put their worldly obligations first. As for me, there is no way I would be satisfied with that rate of progress, nor could anyone convince me of its value. Believe me, I have tried this kind of compromise, and I would not have moved forward an inch if the Beloved in His mercy had not taught me a shortcut. I have always had strong desires, but as I mentioned, I have attempted to practice prayer and live for my own pleasure at the same time. If only there had been someone to encourage me to soar to greater heights, I might have been able to manifest these desires. But such a guide is very rare. Most spiritual directors are excessively cautious in these matters. I believe that is one of the primary reasons that beginners do not generally make more rapid progress toward perfection. It's not the Lord's fault. He never fails. It's our own lower nature that impedes us. One thing we can do is imitate the saints by seeking solitude and silence. Contrary to what we might believe, cultivating virtues like these does not endanger the well-being of the body. Sometimes the physical seems bent on thwarting the spiritual, and the minute the spirit of evil detects a little apprehension, it joins forces with these wretched bodies of ours to confound our minds. The spirit of evil would like nothing better than to make us think that our devotional practices are going to kill us, or at least do damage to our health. It even suggests that crying will make us go blind. I have been through all of this, and I know. But what higher health or deeper sight could we desire than to lose them both for such a cause? Since I have always been so sickly, I have had a tendency to allow my health to tie me down and keep me from engaging in full devotion. I don't pay so much attention to my body anymore. When the spirit of evil put it in my head to worry about compromising my health and prayer, God decided to clear my thinking. So what if I die? I asked myself. And when I wondered if it was all right to feel so tired, I answered myself, I don't need rest. What I need is the cross. I was able to counter many other troubling thoughts in this way. Even though I am chronically ill, I have clearly seen on many occasions that my concerns arose either from the spirit of evil or from my own laziness. Ever since I stopped obsessing about my comfort and ease, my health has radically improved. So it is very important not to be intimidated by our own thoughts in the early stages of the path. You can take my word on this. I know it from experience. It is my hope that simply by reading this litany of my mistakes, you will be able to avoid some of them yourselves. Here is another common temptation. Since we're beginning to enjoy the serenity and growth that comes from prayer, we want everyone else to be on a spiritual path too. There's nothing wrong with this desire. But the attempt to carry it out may backfire unless you use discretion and temper your efforts so it doesn't look like you're trying to teach people. If you hope to do any good in this area, you must always act with integrity. Otherwise, you may end up inadvertently trapping other souls in a snare. I found this out the hard way, so I know what I'm talking about. When I tried to persuade others to practice prayer, they would hear me talking about the wonderful blessings that come from this practice on the one hand, and then observe my own unscrupulous behavior on the other. And I was supposed to be their role model. In fact, I think I served more as a source of temptation and confusion for them. And so they had every reason to miss the mark. Later, they explained to me that they could not find a way to reconcile what I preached and what I practiced. Besides, they actually believed that what was wrong was in fact right, simply because they saw me doing it myself and they respected me. This is a trick of the devil, who tries to twist our virtues to justify his own wicked purposes. No matter how minor our mistakes may be, the devil gains major benefit from them, especially if we commit them in spiritual community. Since my wickedness was already excessive, the spirit of evil must have profited all the more. As it turned out, over the course of many years, only 3 people seemed to have benefited from what I had to say to them. In the 2 or 3 years since the Beloved has strengthened me in virtue, however, many people have benefited. This effort of trying to build up other people is a significant drawback. It can detract from our own growth. In the beginning, we need to put ourselves first. The most important thing at this stage is to take care of ourselves. We should pretend that there is no one in the universe but our soul and our God. This is a very useful practice. We all feel a certain zeal for virtue. This may tempt us to judge the sins and failings of other people. The spirit of evil puts it in our minds that the distress we feel over other people's behavior stems only from a desire to protect God from being dishonored. We become so agitated by our desire to remedy the situation that we are unable to practice prayer. The greatest harm lies in our belief that this distress is a mark of our perfect virtue and passion for God. We need to be mindful of this kind of delusion. Genuine concern for the well-being of the community does not disquiet the soul in this way. The safest path for a soul who practices prayer is to pay no attention to anyone or anything else, but to focus instead on knowing herself and pleasing God. This is vitally important. If I were to tell you about all the mistakes I have seen people make in the name of good intentions, I would never be finished talking. Let us always strive to reveal the good qualities in others, and let our awareness of our own imperfections conceal their defects. We may not be able to do this perfectly at first, but we will gradually acquire great virtue by seeing everyone else as better than ourselves. Then, by the grace of God, which we always need, since without God's grace nothing is possible, we will begin to grow virtuous. Actually, we should beg God to give us these virtues. He never denies anyone who makes a sincere effort. This advice applies to people with very active intellects, who derive a multitude of ideas and concepts from a single thought. For people like me, who don't work well with their minds, my only counsel is to be patient. Eventually, the Lord illuminates us and gives us worthy work to do. Those of us with weak intellects do ourselves more harm than good by trying to think our way to enlightenment. Again, for those of you who are intellectually inclined, I would recommend that you not spend all your time thinking. Even though discursive reason has its place, and it can actually enhance the delight of prayer, intellects forget to observe a Sabbath once in a while and give their minds a rest from all that labor. They think it would be a waste of time. But I consider such waste a tremendous boon. All they need to do, as I have mentioned, is place themselves in the presence of Christ. Instead of wearing themselves out trying to make logical sense of spiritual matters, they should simply speak with Him and delight with Him. They should lay their needs at His feet and acknowledge that He has every right to deny them His company. There is a time for thinking and a time for being. Otherwise, the soul would get tired of always eating the same food. Once we accustom the palate to non-conceptual practices, they become not only delicious, but very helpful. They nourish the soul and give her life, providing all kinds of benefits. I need to keep trying to clarify things, because unless a person has a really masterful spiritual director, these matters are very difficult to understand. For someone with a sharp intellect, like the man who ordered me to write this, just touching on these subjects would be sufficient. But although I wish I could be brief, my own ineptitude prevents me from finding an adequate way to explain such important matters using a minimum of words. I suffered so much myself, I feel sorry for people who only have books to rely on. It's amazing how different what we think we understand is from what we learn later through experience. To come back to what I was saying, let's begin to think about an episode from the Passion. Let's say when our Lord was bound to the pillar. The intellect gets to work trying to come up with reasons why Christ had to suffer such pain and anguish, struggling to comprehend his loneliness and isolation. If a man is well educated and works hard with his mind, he can glean a great deal of understanding from this kind of exercise. We should all begin, continue, and end with this method of prayer. It's an excellent path to follow, and a safe one, until the Lord leads us in other supernatural directions. I talk about all of us, but there are some souls who do better meditating on other things than the Sacred Passion. For just as in heaven there are many mansions, so there are many roads that lead there. Some people find it useful to imagine hell. Others benefit from thinking about death. Some have such tender hearts that they cannot bear to stay with the imagery of the Passion. They find it comforting and inspiring to dwell on the power and glory of God as manifested in his creatures. They prefer to reflect on his infinite love for us and how this love is revealed in all things. This last way is a very good way, as long as it is balanced by sometimes thinking about the life of Christ and all that he did for our sake. He is the source of all our good, past and present. Beginners on the path require wise counsel to determine what they really need. For this reason, an experienced guide is indispensable. If the spiritual director does not have personal experience, he can be badly mistaken and easily lead souls astray simply because he does not understand them and therefore is incapable of helping them to understand themselves.